Welcome to Torah Simecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Racheli Lovglass, and today we'll be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Chet. Yesterday in Perek Zion, we learned of Ezra's significant lineage and scholarly qualifications, and also all the assistance that he merited from Hashem. Next, we saw that during the reign of Artaxerxes, he led this group of Aliyah in the year 458 BCE, after receiving a license from the king to enforce Torah law as the law of the land. Although Ezra is poised to teach Torah to all of these Jews in Judea, he really is a court Jew who is an Or LaGoyim to everybody that he's going to meet. Okay, let's begin the perek. So the first 14 psukim essentially are the list of the people and the census of the Jews that made Aliyah together with Ezra. As he begins, Ve'ela Roshe Avoteim, these are the heads of the household, Vihit Yachsam, and of course he provides the lineage of who they are. Ha'olim Imi, who make Aliyah with me. He's writing this as a first person narrative account, and he's exceptionally inclusive. It's not my Aliyah and they're joining me, it's we are all going together. And then he goes to list the names, and this continues until the end of Pasuk Yudal. It's worth noting that the need at this time for a Talmud Chacham, the caliber of Ezra, to kind of be shipped from Bavel to Israel is really because not only were the Jews in Israel at the time lacking in Torah leadership, but for the most part, they were very much ignorant, as we see in Sefer Chagai. And in truth, with the exception of the period of the Mishnah and the Gemara, today in Israel is really, you know, the first time in 25 years that we see Israel as the center of a Torah life. And Ezra certainly wants to capitalize on the moment now to bring Torah to Israel, scholarly Torah. Okay, from Sukkim Tet Vav to Chav, from verses 15 to 20, there's a symbolism here of representing all of Am Yisrael in his gathering. And it shows us the types of people that Ezra tries to gather. So these we'll do inside. Ve'ekbetzem el ha-nahar haba, gather all of these people to the river that I'm approaching, el hava, towards the Ahava River, ve'nachaneh sham yamim shlosha, and they wait there for 3 days. That 3 day delay is probably because he's trying to figure out exactly who's with him. Ve'avina ba'am, and I figure it out amongst the people, u'bakohanim, from the Kohanim, u'bibnei Levi lo matzati sham. So I see that there's somehow a representation of all the different parts of the Jewish people, but for the people of Levi, there's a very limited amount. Ve'eshlecha, and he sends a delegation in Pasuk Yud Zayin, it tells you, Pasuk Tet Zayin gives us the list of names of the people who go as a delegation, and where do they go? Pasuk Yud Zayin, Va'atzaveh Otam, and I send these delegates, Al Ido Harosh Bekasifia, to a man named Ido in Kasifia, Va'asima Befim Dvarim Ludaber Al Ido, and I give them the exact words to speak to Ido. Lavi lanu misharsim leveit elkenu, to bring us Levim to serve in the house of Hashem, and they're successful. Pasuk Yudchet, once again, Ezra is thanking Hashem. Viaviu lanu, and they delivered for us these Levim. Kiyad elkenu atova alenu, because the hand of God was with us. Ish sechel, men of Levi of great intellect, and he goes on to list the numbers. I want to talk for a second about what Ezra was probably thinking when organizing his journey. He noticed that there were no descendants of Levi, and they were really an essential part of the trip back to Yerushalayim because only the Levim can perform certain duties in the Beis HaMikdash. And although at this time the Beis HaMikdash was already functioning and had Levim, if Ezra's group of returnees didn't include them, they would be very incomplete in terms of representing all of Am Yisrael. And it probably was inconceivable to Ezra himself as a Kohen that they would travel without them. So he dispatches this delegate to go to Kasifia to petition for Levim to join. And he does get this representation. And this was important so that he can show all of Am Yisrael that he cares about each piece of them. Based on the numbers that are shown here in the Psukim, which comes out to 1,776 Olim, this kind of translates into a total of approximately 9,000 people that traveled with Ezra, give or take a few, because remember, the number is probably represented in only the males and not the women, the elderly, or the children. And the question we can ask ourselves, and then Pasuk Chaf, I'm sorry, I left that out, Pasuk Chaf tells us the Netinim, the temple servants, that are descendants already back from the time of David HaMelech, how many went. So by the time we get to the end of Pasuk Chaf, We saw that number of 1776. So I want to talk for a second about why the Levium potentially originally declined to participate, or really there weren't enough of them. If we remember back to Perek Bet, the original census of the Aliyah with Zerubbabel, of the 42,360 people that were listed, only 341 of them were Levium, also a very, very small amount. And theories abound as to a lack of representation amongst the Levium, and I'm only going to suggest a couple of them. On the one hand, there were socioeconomic factors at play that potentially made it very hard for the Levium to travel. Since their only means of support was from Meiser and Truma, if they were not getting that during the time of Galus Bavel while they were in exile, they did not have the economic skills to then become self-sustaining in Bavel, and they didn't have the ability to now make Aliyah. Some people also proposed that after the Chorban of the first Beit HaMikdash, when the Jews were dragged to Bavel and the Levium were singing songs like Al Naros Bavel, that they were, you know, depressed when they were kind of being told by their oppressors to continue to sing the songs of the Mikdash in their travels into exile, it kind of spurred a tremendous depression for the Levium. And this depression was so profound that they, you know, remained depressed throughout the time period in Bavel, and they were unable now to make Aliyah. I do think there are more compelling explanations. We see in Sefer Divrei Hayamim that after Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the first king of the 10 tribes from the northern kingdom, after he set up his northern temples, he replaced the Levium with his own clerics and forced the regular Levium to move to Judea. So it could be that they were just not part of the group anymore at this point. But lastly, and most famously, Yechezkel the Navi suggests that due to lots of sins, most of the Levium were stripped of all of their rights to Truma, even still in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And since Ezra, as we see from the lineage that he traces earlier in Perek Zion for himself, he is a descendant of Tzadok. Tzadok the Kohen was the only family of Levium that were not stripped of their rights to Truma. And it's possible that the Levium did not ascend with Ezra because they were afraid to join with him since he had descended from that group. So by him reaching out to the Levium in Kasifia, he's kind of encouraging them to join yet again. And in truth, it's not coincidental that the decline of the Levium continued throughout Bayit Sheni, to the point that by the time we get to the end of Bayit Sheni, we see that the Levium are really almost completely assimilated with the people at the time, which were the Greeks and then later the Romans. Okay, going back to the Perek, from Psukim Chaf Aleph till about Pasuk Lamed, we actually learn about the journey itself. I'm going to read inside Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Ve'ekra Sham, and there where he delayed, once the Levium arrive and they're still at the Ahava River, the Ekra Sham Tzom, Ezra calls for a fast, Al Hanahar Lehitanot Lifnei Elokeinu, to beseech before Hashem, Levakosh Mimenu Derech Yisra, to ask Hashem for an easy journey, Lanu Letapenu Lechomoshenu, for us, for our children, and for all of our possessions. So it seems like this might be like the first Tfilat HaDerech, so to speak. And we're told from Ezra's perspective why he does that. Pasuk Chavbet, Ki boshti lish'ol min ha-melech ha'alu prashim. Because I was ashamed to ask the king, he's referring to Artachashasta, for an entourage of soldiers and chariots. La'azreinu me'oyev baderech, to help us from any enemies on the way. Ki amarnu la'melech le'mor, because we had told the king, Yad Elokeinu al-kol mevakshav l'tova, that Hashem's hand is going to be with all those who seek him out. Ve'uzo va'apo al-kol ozvav, and Hashem's anger will be projected towards anybody who leaves God. And therefore, Ezra decides to declare a fast day to Davin, and Hashem accepts our prayers. And so, in truth, this whole fast story is an example of Ezra's tremendous emuna. He refuses the escort of Artachashasta, but before proceeding with his journey, he fasted. So it's not unreasonable to assume that he could get military accompaniment for his journey. If anything, in contrast, later on in Sefer Nehemiah, Nehemiah does receive military accompaniment when he travels. And we don't really know whether or not Ezra erred in refraining making the request. We do get a sense that he's demonstrating a certain hesitancy with the king. But more than that, he really truly believes that Hashem will protect their journey. And this is his opportunity for a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, not only in front of Artaxerxes, the king, but in front of the entire Persian Empire. And it's really teaching the Jewish people something at the moment. But we do actually see here the very, you know, the language, the beginnings of the language of Tfilas HaDerech, La'azreini ma'oyev ba'derech. So we do see those things. And it's also not just any group. This is a group of people, as we're going to see from Sukkim Chavdal to Lamed. I'm not going to list them specifically, that they separate. Avdila Misari HaKonim Shnei. So he separates 12 Kohanim, and he's going to divvy to all of these Kohanim. He's going to weigh out for them the silver and the gold for them later to the deposit into the Beis HaMikdash when they get there. And the amounts of kalim, of vessels that they're being given, it are a lot. Sukkim Chavdal Talamid tell us that what the load is, and it approximately becomes, I don't know the exact modern day equivalent, but about 25 tons of silver and 4 tons of gold, something like that, which understandably would be very coveted by thieves on the way. And to defend himself against these bandits, we would expect him to get military service, but he doesn't want to once he has turned down that opportunity from Artaxerxes. So he goes out of his way to recognize that we can't just be somech al hanes. He can't rely on a miracle from God, but in order for him to show his effort and to participate, he actually does implore God for that help, which is really the precedent for us of the concept of Tfilas HaDerech when we travel. Okay, so that takes us to Pasuk Lamed. Now let's look what happens. Where does he travel from? When and why? Like, how did he basically station his entire story? Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vanis'a minahar Ahava. And again, we're going to see language from Tfilas HaDerech. We traveled away from the Ahava River, B'shneimasar l'chodesh harishon, on the 12th day of the month of Nisan. Notice that it only mentions the month as l'chodesh harishon. It does not mention the months according to the secular names, which does change later on during the Persian period, as we see in Sefer Nehemiah. V'yad Elokeinu hayta aleinu, and once again he mentions Hashem, that Hashem's hand was with them, and the language of Tfilas HaDerech, V'yatzileinu mikaf oyev orev al haderech, and Hashem helped us from the enemy and the ambushes on the way. If you remember, back in Pasuk Chav Gimel, he said Ve'ya'etarlanu, that after he davened to Hashem, it says that Hashem listened to them. But how does he know at the time when they're still standing at the Ahava River that Hashem listened to them? Right, that's something that should be written, that Hashem accepted his prayers. That's something that should be written only upon his arrival in Yerushalayim. And here also theories abound. And one of the understandings is that Ezra himself might actually be Malachi, the last Navi to ever be recorded, or that we know of. And it could be that upon reciting his tefillah at the Ahava River with all of his attendees, something in Ezra's nevuah or his understanding or his relationship with Hashem made him comfortable to know that Hashem would accept his tefillah, and he kind of gives Hashem gratitude upon that already in advance, so to speak. But again, here in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, he lets us know that the tefillah was accepted and they were saved from any enemies. Vanavo Yerushalayim, and they arrive in Yerushalayim. Vaneshev Shav Yavim Shtosha, and they kind of just stay there for 3 days, almost to, you know, you would think maybe to get over their jet lag or their travels, but in truth, and we'll see that later on in Sefer Ezra, what was happening during those 3 days, how he's really scouting out the land and trying to figure out the pulse of the people. But during those first 3 days, they just kind of waited out. And on the fourth day, they weigh out the money to give to the Beit HaMikdash, the money and the vessels and everything that was brought. So the purpose of this story, at least until Pasuk Lamed Aleph, and we'll see again soon, is that Ezra is constantly pointing out the involvement of Hashem in his entire journey and how he managed to come to Yerushalayim. And he emphasized that it all was because of his faith in Hashem, that he even gained the favor of the king, that he acquired the items that he needed, and that he had a safe and speedy trip from Babel. And he really continually thanks Hashem. You know, I like to call Ezra the Baruch Hashem man. He constantly is spewing forth Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. And he thanks Hashem for the help he received in organizing the Aliyah in the first place, finding the leaders, the representatives, And potentially he goes on and on to say that so often, maybe because that wasn't such an easy thing to just assume that he was able to do. Okay, Pasuk Lamed Hey lets us know what happens after those first 3 days, right? We saw that they delivered to the Beis HaMikdash whatever was brought. And then Pasuk Lamed Hey, we're told, Ha'ba'im Mishvim Mibnei HaGola, Hikrivi Olot, that the returnees who made Aliyah now gave sacrifices, Parim Shnei Masar, 12 bullocks, I'll call Yisrael Elim Tishim, and it goes on and on about the numbers. So these 12 bulls, again, are going to point out to the representation of all Am Yisrael. And in truth, here, Ezra could be compared to Eliyahu HaNavi and Har Carmel, when he built an altar out of 12 stones, symbolizing all 12 of the Shvatim, even though neither Eliyahu represented all 12, he was really referring to the northern kingdom then, of the 10 tribes, nor Ezra, who's coming now as an Analiyah, but we're still missing the 10 lost tribes, but still, he is representing all of Am Yisrael in its ideal form. One thing that's interesting to note is that, and the Gemara in Maseches Horios talks about this, like what, you know, why they're giving these particular karbanot. The Gemara teaches us that only individuals can die without leaving behind inheritors responsible for their sin. However, the community here lives on forever, and it's possible that Ezra was able to bring Korbanot to atone for the sins of the first Beit HaMikdash, when typically you couldn't do that afterwards. And Ezra really sees his coming back to Israel, not as individuals, but part of a much bigger Aliyah process, of a Geula, so to speak, and he viewed his Aliyah, the people in Judah, as representative of all Am Yisrael, and he really believed in this notion of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, that we are all responsible for one another, and he wants to show with these sacrifices that Bnei Yisrael had returned to its land and were unified both in faith and in their Torah observance, and he's really, really setting out this tone for the people of the importance of tradition and Mesorah. Again, if we think back now to, you know, what this trip really entailed, it really reinforced the mission of the trip as an uplifting one, not just as a trek into the, you know, in the desert for a spiritual journey on the way to Israel, but to provide the people who came with a lot of moral support, giving them a good feeling about what they were going to be encountering and what they were doing and encouraging them. And in this parak, Ezra really shows not only deep faith, but also the purity of Am Yisrael and how that's important to him. And somehow ceremoniously, we see these symbolic acts along the way of his journey to galvanize public opinion that they should all be represented. And that's the way he's going to continue to model his behavior once he gets to the land of Israel, which we're going to see in Prakim Tet and Yud, and also comes back in Sefer Nehemiah Perek Chet. But kind of just to summarize some of the leadership traits that we've seen of Ezra up until now. He's a role model of lineage and checking on his own purity when he lists himself properly before making Aliyah. He's a true motivator in that he uses lots of symbolic actions to represent all of Am Yisrael with the different korbanot and with the particular dates that he tries to mimic. We obviously see he's a very faithful man, that he's looking for no escorts and he's constantly cognizant and vocal about the Baruch Hashem piece, that this is all due to Hashem's aid. He is certainly a visionary. Ezra set out on a mission and what his plans were to do. Even the idea that we saw yesterday of Chok and Mishpat develops kind of the pomp and circumstance of previous times that he's continuing now into these days, similar to what we had seen at the standing of Har Sinai and then in the conquering of the land of Israel. We see in terms of communication that Ezra is very, very diplomatic, which is what gives him success, A, in dealing with the king, and then later in sending the delegates to Kasifia. So far we've seen him communicate effectively. We know he's knowledgeable in Torah, right? Even just the way he's introduced as a sofer mahir. Just his devotion to Torah is very clear. He really set his heart to study and practice and teach. He organized this crazy aliyah of 9,000 people at a time where they were really very, very complacent and even successful in Persia. So all of those things kind of lead us to kind of recognize what type of a leader Ezra would be. And if we are to compare this aliyah that Ezra just had with the aliyah of Zerubbabel back in Perek Bet, while there are many differences, there are also similarities. So the Aliyah of Ezra here wasn't as big as Zerubbabel. It's possible that the people now are not as excited to go as they had been, even though he did, even though he managed to bring forth 9,000 people, there probably wasn't much excitement because his aliyah is serving a different purpose than that earlier. Earlier on, the people were making aliyah because they're building the Beit HaMikdash and they want to be part of something new. The Jews that are making aliyah now really have to want to go and be willing to live under the strict Torah laws that Ezra is going to be able to enforce. But he also himself is eager to do the work of the Beis HaMikdash as a Kohen, which is why when there's no Leviim, he reaches out for them. But it tells us a lot about the people that are coming with him and what the expectations are when we do arrive in Israel, which we will learn about tomorrow. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmas, Rose Foreman, Rezel Rachel Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.